welcome to the June episode of Amiga Ireland. I'm Irla.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Luke.
And in today's episode, a workbench demo called Italy in Lockdown.
OS 3.2 is released.
Amiga Ireland IE is on liveira.chat.
You can find the show notes for this episode in your podcast app or at our website. But before we get started, lads, how have you been over the last month?
Oh, busy, the usual. Yes, we're flat out in work with some lovely wranglings with the FDA and all that good fun, you know. But other than that, it's been some cracking weather here recently. I don't know about you guys, but it's been very, very warm. Fierce warm.
It's been the same story in here. I'm actually really glad that the summer is finally here because it's been pretty chilly. Pretty chilly indeed.
Yeah, we were wondering when winter or when summer was going to get here.
Yeah, but last 2 days have been really absolutely amazing. So I just like you, I've just been enjoying, you know, like the weather, trying to go out with my daughter as much as possible.
Yeah, good stuff.
Let me see. Yeah, okay. So I actually had a blast at Rob's Basic workshop at the Computer Museum of Ireland, which is held online recently. Rob, you did a really good job on that.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Yeah, it was really fun. Yeah, so the museum decided to finish off their Coder Dojo workshops, their last one, with a basic workshop, and Rob ran that in the Commodore 64 emulator, and everyone could join in on this Zoom call using a web-based emulator. So it was really accessible and easy for people to get involved. And this was our second time doing this with Rob, so even the museum curator and myself were able to, you know, get involved. It was cool. Really good fun. Thanks for that, Rob.
Yeah, no worries.
Now, if you've been to Amiga Ireland, you'll know that we have workshops on whatever topics we can each year. Rob has done plenty of heavy lifting there, actually. But another one of our presenters over the years is Carl Jekyll. And he's here to help us out today. Hi, Carl.
How you doing, guys?
Hello.
Yeah, we're doing great. Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming here. I hope you're not disillusioned once you hear what goes on behind the scenes.
No, it's very interesting. It's a lot of hard work and preparation.
Yeah, thanks. It is. Yeah, it's great. And it's great to have a bit of help to come along once in a while. I remember when you first signed up, actually, for Amiga Ireland at the first event. I was thinking, like, I know that name from somewhere. And I opened up one of the little magazines from Coogie years back that I had been leafing through, and I said, there's Carl's articles, like, you know, I've been reading your articles before I even met you. It was amazing to meet you in person.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we had quite a few good years on Coogie, and we you know, once you get roped into these things, you're writing articles for every time we'd run a little newsletter, everybody would be rounded up to okay, what articles are you going to write this month, you know.
Yeah, it must have been a fair chunk of work. I mean, we have a lot. I mean, we brought them to Amiga Ireland about 2 years ago, I think, maybe three. We had them on display. You churned out an awful lot of written material.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wasn't involved in the very early years, but I mean, Coogee ran for so many years, you know. And I think I don't know now, was it quarterly, maybe the magazines were, but you know, over all those years, you do build up a lot of material. And of course, it was at the height, you know, it was the peak of Commodore and Amiga years, so in a sense, there was no shortage of material to write about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's excellent. And you also have written AMI Speed Test, which is doing very well on AMINET at the moment. Would you want to tell people who mightn't have heard of it what it does in a nutshell?
Yeah, it's just it's a simple speed test program for the Amiga. So, I mean, I essentially wrote it because I was getting my Amiga back working again. I was getting it on the network, and I wasn't really sure how fast it actually went. And so it's just a simple speed test program. You run it. It connects to the nearest speedtest.net server, or Netflix have something called fast.com. It can connect to that as well. And it just does some download and upload tests, and it gives you a summary of, you know, megabits per second or kilobits per second, as the case may be, of your Amiga. So, it seems to be popular enough. You know, people are using it. I can see on the server, you know, people, you know, it requires server-side stuff to work. So, I can see, you know, this people using it every day. I did have some, you know, feature requests and, you know, bug reporting thing early on, but it seems to be stable enough now. It's settled, so I haven't done much on it recently, but seems to be doing its job.
Yeah, well, you've had like over 2,000 downloads in AmiNet last time I checked. Have you had any actual feedback, you know, beyond that?
Well, certainly people, like I say, early on, you know, the first, basically, if you go back through the you know, the change log in it, you can see that people have asked, you know, can you add, like one of the things that I originally had, I think it was just kilobits per second. And to me, like I worked in network stuff for years and it was always about bits per second, but a lot of people didn't like that. They were like, no, we use characters per second, or we want, you know, whatever kind of, you know, measurement you want. So that was one sort of feature request. People like their measurements in different ways. Just other little things, you know, some people like to use the CLI, some people like to use it in a window. So just to try and cater for, you know, different people's requests.
Yeah, well, it's a really well-rounded and, you know, completed app, like you say. Yeah, fair play. If there was nothing like it, so it's great when a new app comes along that kind of, you know, scratches an itch that no other app is doing. Fair play.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of surprising there wasn't one, but sure, I suppose back in the day you didn't really get on the internet too often.
So. Yeah, yeah. There were, you know, it was the phone line was the bottleneck, and that was it, you know.
Yeah, and your modem told you what your speed was.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to the news. Right, first up, vAmiga, the OCS Amiga emulator for macOS, has come out of beta. It's been described as having a way cleaner codebase than UAE, but is in the early stages of development at version 1. That said, it's been used to run Black Lotus demo very well, so if you're looking for something that fits well with your other apps and has a nice, neat interface, you know, why not check it out?
Cool, and a big one, I'm sure a lot of people have heard, but if you haven't, OS 3.2 has been released this month. I literally got my copy earlier on today, have had a very quick install of it, and it's excellent. It is based on 3.1.4, which was based on 3.1. But of course, you know, anyone who was around in the late 90s or early noughties will remember there were 3.5 and 3.9 as well. So this actually takes quite a few features from 3.9 and brings them into 3.2. So, you know, so sort of like it's beginning to approach feature parity. So the numbering is a little bit confusing, but, you know, if you do spend a lot of time using the workbench, it's a very worthy upgrade.
Yeah, and I have to say on that the stream was excellently hosted by our own George, a.k.a. Walk Arrow. So if you're on Twitch, look for Walk Arrow GR. GR is for Greece. And give him a follow there and check it out, because it was excellently presented and hosted. And I hope George does more on Twitch.
Mm-hmm. AmiProv can create an OS3 partition with a network boot disk. This was actually created by Marius Lauritsen, a developer from Norway, and using just a minimal boot disk, which includes a skeleton version of a Roadshow, the minimal version, he actually demonstrates necessary ADFs being downloaded and mounted one at a time to install the Amiga operating system without any disks. So be sure to check it if you like networking and installing and booting.
Okay, ROM kernel reference manual, the coveted addendum. Now, this is work started by Camilla Bowman and Jason Stead. They're two of the OS 3.2 developers, I think. And the aim of this is to have a follow-up book that acts as an addendum to the last set of ORCAMs produced by Commodore. Now, the ORCAMs or ROM kernel manuals, they're fantastic books, but they only cover up to version 2 of the OS. They were released, I think, shortly after the Amiga 3000, so it was kind of that level. And there was never an update after that to cover release 3 or the AGA machines. So the idea here is to have a book that picks up where the 2.0 ORCAMs left off and cover everything right up until 3.2. Now, if you've seen the ORCAMs, they're absolutely huge. I think the library is like 900 pages for the library's manual. So, I mean, this is a massive undertaking, really. And they've only really started. So it's more about the idea here. They acknowledge this themselves, that they've only actually written about 16 pages, so it's, you know, it's a long way off. But it's a great idea, and it's hopefully they'll continue with it. So far, it's just it's an introduction to Reaction, and there's a little example of opening a window with Reaction, which is one of the new things that's in 3.2, or at least bundled with 3.2. Of course, it's all voluntary, but hopefully these guys can, you know, find time to work on it, because I think it would be a really fantastic resource for Amiga developers.
Absolutely. And just another point on the 3.2 release is that the CD has an NDK, the native developer kit. So that's all the things you need to program on the Amiga. And because there are so many changes to 3.2, they've released this new NDK and it supports all the features, but you can use it for developing for older systems as well. But this documentation, the reference manuals will go hand in hand with that. And hopefully it'll get fleshed out, because the originals are, like you say, they're colossal and they're a great mine of information.
Right. Amiga Transfer, which is a Windows application we've talked about previously for connecting to your Amiga, has been updated to 1.1.0. And there have been a lot of bug fixes in this one, so it's definitely download worthy. They include fixes to the floppy tool, which now works for all kickstarts in the floppyless boot method. Performance has been improved too, and you can see the full list of changes at the link. And again, well done to Orvalis for producing this really cool tool.
Terrible Fire 1230, TF 1230 beta boards are up and running. So there are a couple of people who are building these. You all know the Terrible Fire accelerators, and they're from Stephen Leary, who's actually recently just bought a house up the road from me. So officially a neighbor. But he's working on this board. And this is very interesting, because he's built a couple of different O30 boards, and his sort of design approach and philosophy is absolutely no nonsense, minimal kind of hardware. Everything's in the cheapest CPLD he can find that will do the job. And so he's built a couple of O30 boards for the CD32 and for the Amiga 500, and this is for the 1200. And he's aiming for somewhere for between 80 and 100 euros for an O30 accelerator with 64 megs of RAM. And an IDE port, which is that's colossal. That's, you know, because that's a sweet spot for your WHD load setups and stuff like that. And it's you're not going to get anywhere near that with for the existing O30 boards, which are all sort of either sort of high end stuff from individual computers, or they're vintage stuff like the Blizzard 1230, which is kind of the king of those boards, and they go for crazy money on eBay these days. So this is really interesting. So hopefully now in the next few months we'll see those boards starting to appear.
I think I'll be an early customer for that.
There you go.
Right. AmiIRT 3.8 has been released only for Morphos, actually. But AmiIRT is one of the best, if not the best, IRC client. It's been updated by Nicholas Hannes-Salin and Harry Piru-Sintinen. There are some bug fixes and also new SSL. Also, the list of the servers have been updated. Apart from that, also the official support channel has been transferred from the Freenode to a Libera chat, and it's now available on Morphos server, irc.libera.chat.
Some more Morphos news, and that's that the Morphos store has launched. This is a new online store, and it offers new and reconditioned hardware and software for Morphos. You can buy various PowerPC Macs, can run Morphos, various accessories, and Morphos-themed merchandise like stickers and mouse pads. Now, the store has been set up by Yannick Bushy. Now, Yannick was actually very helpful running tests of AMI speed tests for me on Morphos. So thanks for the help with that, Yannick, and good luck with the store.
Yeah, he's a good guy, all right.
Very nice.
He also puts together not a distro, but sort of an add-on pack for MorphOS, which has a lot of the kind of commonly used programs in it. You know, so if you're starting out with MorphOS, you can, what did he call it? Is it the Butterfly Pack? And Chrysalis, that's what it is. Yes, thank you. And it has loads of great stuff in there. If you're new to MorphOS, it's definitely worth a download to pad it out, let's say.
Now, this is an interesting one. It's the first workbench demo I've ever seen. It's called Italy in Lockdown, and it recreates the spread of COVID in Italy. Now, what it does is it opens a window on Workbench and it presents an outline map of Italy and its regions. And it starts with day one of the first announced detection of COVID in Italy. And every second of clock time is 1 hour you know, of historical time on the map. And as each announcement pops up, you know, it'll say, you know, whatever the mayor of this region announces a lockdown, whatever, or, you know, this region detects for the first case of whatever, and the colors will change on the map to match with it. And the days tick by. Now, in spite of the barrage of COVID news at the moment, I still found it really interesting and enjoyable actually to watch. So it's well worth checking out. So that's called Italy in Lockdown, and it's available on Aminet. And one other thing, we have a new IRC channel. It's #amiga-ie, and it's on libera.chat. Is that how you say it? Libera.chat or Libera. And thank you to Orvales, Stormkeeper, and Aris Amiga for making that happen. They set it up, reserved it, put a nice topic on it and everything like that. So it will be quiet over the summer. We're taking a break from the podcast for the summer. It will be quiet. But anytime there's something, you know, a scheduled gathering online, that's the place it'll probably happen. So feel free to pop in anyway.
Now, speaking of breaks for the summer, Muad'Dib, with his excellent Lightwave 3D course, is taking a break for the summer. So it might be a good opportunity to catch up, because it's been very active, very busy, or very, let's say, productive with his classes. And yeah, so now if you go to the, we'll have a link in the show notes, but if you go to the page that he's set up, you can see all the previous lessons. There must be 40 or something of them at this point. But yeah, over the summer, when the inevitable summer rains come, it might be a nice time to catch up and do some, you know, to go through the series of Lightwave lessons.
Amiga User is a paper magazine in English for all Amiga users, classics and NG systems, emulators, enthusiasts, gamers, and demo scene fans. In the newest issue, you will be able to find the best games for Amiga, InDivision, MK3 ScanDoubler review, Arduino, Amiga floppy disk drive, Amiga 500 tips and tricks, digital sound editing, and many, many more. The magazine is printed in full color, and you can order it at bittronic.pl.
There was one issue I was looking at where they were showing you how to control your house, things in your house, using that X10 protocol, I think it's called. So, mm-hmm. You know, you can adjust your lighting and your appliances in your house from your Amiga. I was absolutely blown away to see that. Okay, let's move on to the games. WHD Load has had new game installers added or updated. Now, WHD Load, of course, lets you install Amiga games from floppy disks to your hard disk, even if that wasn't originally supported. So these are the games that have been added. Daimo's Quest has had keyboard input fixed. It used to be awkward to enter text where you had to repeatedly press the keys. So that's fixed now. Zyconix now saves to the hard disk. That's the high scores. And HeroQuest was crashing sometimes when saving the game, and now that's fixed. Atomic RoboKid now lets you enable the cheat before, as you start the game. And that is all of the updates for this. Oh, and it's also added two-button joystick support. And there are the WHD uploads this month.
Yeah, it's great, the WHD Load update, because as well as just making them hard disk installable, yeah, this whole adding CD32 pad support and two-button support is just brilliant, because so many games are so much better, so much nicer to play when you've got multiple buttons. It's great, instead of reaching for the space bar or, you know, one of the keyboard buttons for the second function. But
are there many games, Rob, actually, that take advantage of a second button?
I can think of two. There are a few, but so many more of them are fixed now, let's say. Like, there are some platformers that were even released on the CD32 that were still only one button, and you know you had up for jump and stuff like that, and that's when you control pad and a console, that's just a no-no, you know, but it's the way it was. So some of the fixes that they've done are really nice. Like I'm trying to think. The Flashback is one that naturally supports two buttons, and Aladdin, and a couple of others. But things like Desert Strike, I think you can have a separate button for each of the different weapons, and there, you know, there are nice little touches like that that are just make it so much nicer to play games like that. Well, speaking of WHD load, the Amiga Metal Gear port has been released. So DJ Hoffman has ported this from the MSX original. Now, this is for an 8-bit game. This is an incredibly deep game, and there's a lot to it. There's a lot involved in it. And if you're familiar with the Metal Gear series, you'll know what I'm talking about. But the original was on the MSX. It got ported to a lot of different machines, mostly inferior 8-bits. So this is a port from the original with some newer or some graphical tweaks and updates for the Amiga, but also with a new soundtrack. So Hoffman, you know, he writes demos, he writes music, and he's big into his trackers. He's done all the music again from scratch with nice modern Pro Tracker tunes, and it sounds amazing. It really, really does. But what is a lovely touch is he's also built an emulator for the MSX sound chip into the game, so you can switch between the original sound and the Amiga enhanced sound, which is a lovely touch that was not necessary, but it's a lovely attention to detail. You know, I don't know. He's a supremely talented guy, because he did the music, of course, for the Eon demo and for a load of other demos as well. Impressive stuff. Impressive work. But if you look at the game, it's you know, the graphics obviously aren't the most amazing thing you'll see on the Amiga, but for an 8-bit game, they're surprisingly good. And like I say, the gameplay is like second to none. It's a great game. Give that a go. It's downloadable from we have it a link in the show notes there, and it's you know, anyone who's played it just seems to be a big fan.
The funny thing is, the game actually comes from 1987, but it doesn't look like a game from 1987. It's way ahead of its time. I think Hideo Kojima did a fantastic job, you know, like creating that game at that time. There is a port for C64 as well. It doesn't look very well, but the playability is pretty all right. It's of course, it's also chopped a little bit, comparing to the original. But the Amiga version, it's absolutely, you know, like a almost one to one in like a graphically, the port from MSX to Amiga, and the sounds just that they have been in like a enhanced, which is a very very nice touch of him.
Yeah, yes, a lot of atmosphere to it.
Sounds
it's great
much
game.
More modern.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Space Pilot of Death is a spaceship versus asteroids game written by Martin Vopst. It's free to download from Amiga.net, and it runs on any Amiga. It's a very simple vertical scroller. You dodge the asteroids, you've just one life, see how long you can last before you get your energies drained by hitting the asteroids. So it's nothing you haven't seen before, but it's nicely put together, and there's a little option to generate a QR code to upload your high score. Now, in the readme, he says he actually wrote the game after getting his Amiga 500 out of storage after 20 years. So we obviously hadn't lost the touch of assembly programming, because that's the really interesting bit here, is that the archive contains the complete source code of the game in assembly. And certainly if you're interested in experimenting with game programming in assembly, or you want to learn a little bit more about how to, you know, handle sprites and collisions and play music in the background and all that kind of stuff, this is a nice, simple, you know, ready-made game with example code to learn from. Obviously it's a bit of a jump from just learning assembly to writing a game, but really nice that there's nothing, you know, it's not too complicated, something you could probably get your head around. So worth a look.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that is really cool. Whenever I hear assembly these days, I start thinking of that Jack Nicholson movie where he went off to a house in a remote place and slowly went mad. because anyone I've been asking about assembly, they've said, look, just learn C. I used to program in assembly and take it from being learned C.
Yeah.
But it's great that the source code's available.
Yeah.
Right, Shadow Warrior has been ported to OS4. This is an FPS by 3D Realms from the 90s. It had really nice music and varied environments. To play it on OS4, you just need the data files, which you can get from Good Old Games, Steam, or the DOS version. And the rest is taken care by this application, which is JF Shadow Warrior. And that's available on OS4 Depot.
I think this game has been also ported to OS3, to be honest. And then the requirements are absolutely massive. It requires at least 060 and AGA 16 megabytes of RAM. It works also with the graphical card. Just like a little bit of an update. Yeah.
Very good. Right, and our last game for this episode is by Stefan Vogt. He released Hibernated 1 Director's Cut. Now, this is a text adventure that's been released for about 20 platforms, including Amiga and the Commodore range. It's very old school, not many graphics, but does look enjoyable from what I've seen. It's set in space as well, which is probably my favorite genre. And there's a boxed edition planned, but also a sequel coming later in the year. So, yeah, well, we're checking out, and there are a few nice videos of it online already, so you can get a preview. Right, hopefully that's enough gaming news to keep you busy until next time. Now we've got our discoveries of interesting things we've learned since the previous podcast episode. Right, first up is FretCalc by Ian Inglis. This is a tool to help instrument makers. It's quite unique. Basically, if you're making a guitar or some other stringed instrument, the distance between the frets where you put your fingers have to be calculated correctly so you can tune it or even play it. And this takes care of that by asking you, you know, how long the neck is going to be and, you know, what scales or what instrument it is. And it tells you how long it'll have to be for the design you're using. And it takes care of all of that. Really cool to see that on Amiga. Well done.
That is niche. It's excellent.
Okay, so the Amiga 1000 at Computex 1986 in Dublin's RDS. So this is a little video on the RTE Archives website. Now, for listeners outside of Ireland, RTE is the state broadcaster here. And they have a, you know, website with all old TV clips and stuff like that. But this is an exhibition that was held in Dublin, and it was the Amiga 1000 was shown to the public for the first time. And in the video you can see a demonstration, I think it's Graphicraft, looks like, with a picture of Mona Lisa, and Sonics playing Axel F. Now, I could be wrong, but I think the person doing the demo is Morris Cohen. And Morris Cohen, as in MC, and MC were the Commodore distributors here. And for anyone in Dublin, they might remember the computer shop in the Grafton Arcade, or Beyond 2000 later on in Chatham Street.
That was him, was it?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Yeah, yeah, because that was, Beyond 2000 was full on. That was when Commodore, they had Commodore PCs stuff like that. You know, it wasn't just home computers, you know. And obviously dated the shop. It was obviously in the 90s because it was called Beyond 2000. You know? Anyway, the interesting thing about the video is, well, interesting because it's an Amiga 1000 for the first time, but the cost of it was 2,500 Irish pounds was what they quoted. But they also had a Macintosh Plus on display for 9,000 Irish pounds. Now, in today's money and in euros, that'd be about 4,000 euro for the Amiga or 18,000 for the Mac Plus.
Oh my God.
So you can see that, I mean, I guess the Mac Plus probably came with a laser writer and, you know, whatever. But, I mean, you know, you walk up to one stand, it's $4,000 for graphics and sound, and then $18,000 for the Mac.
Good Lord.
You know? but what we're, I suppose what really drives home is the how cost effective. I mean, that was 86. So, I mean, when the Amiga 500 came out, you know, how cost effective that was, you know, compared to Macs and PCs of the day, even though, you know, the Amiga 500 wasn't cheap as a home computer, but it was still so cheap. But, anyway, it's a nice little video. And if you're Irish, there's tons of other, clips. You can easily waste some time looking at all kinds of old, Irish TV clips. So nice little look there.
Right, next one I have is called CoolCalc, a skinnable calculator for workbench. And it's basically just what it says on the tin. It's a skinnable calculator. It comes with one skin, but also a template that you can edit in your favorite graphics editor, like Deluxe Paint or whatever. The size of the calculator cannot be changed, nor can the button locations. And I'm not sure if you can, I don't think you can skin the buttons either or change the display area, but basically everything else, as far as I can tell, from poking around with it for a bit, is skinnable. I actually think you could do something quite tasteful with a little kind of embossed boing ball in the background or something. But anyway, it's probably one of those things that will remain a nice idea, but I won't actually do. Cool, that's CoolCalc, available on AmiNet.
Now, Usenet like it's 1991. Now, Usenet, hopefully most of you know what Usenet is, but there's a website now called Old Usenet, which carries a live feed of Usenet from 30 years ago. So if you visit the site, you'll see posts from June 1991. Now, just in case you're not familiar with Usenet, it's the equivalent of text-based forums from the late 80s and early 90s. And I guess if you're probably, you know, under 40 or under 45, you probably never exposed to it. And possibly if you weren't at university or in a sort of technical company at the time to have a Usenet feed, probably difficult to know what it was. But it was really, I was quite lucky. I was at university at the time and, you know, I was, for my 4 years of university, a lot of it was spent on Usenet. Now, I didn't spend too much time on this website, oldus.net, but I saw that they have an NNTP server available, so you don't need to go to the website. You can use the NNTP protocol, which is nntp.oldus.net. So what you do is you install a newsreader on your PC, your Amiga, your Mac, whatever, and you point it at this NNTP server, and you're instantly transported back to 1991, June 1991. And the posts that are there are, you know, it's got a history of probably the last couple of months posts or whatever. So it's exactly like it's June 91 and you're seeing all the discussions as they were back then. Now, you know, I spent a lot of time reading Usenet back then and, you know, I learned so much from it. And actually at last year's Amiga Ireland, I had a nice chat with Dave Haney about it because I used to read his posts in the, he used to post quite a lot on, in, CompSys Amiga hardware. Mm-hmm. And, look, thinking back on it now, it was amazing, really. You had all the Commodore engineers, you know, posting up stuff, you know, every other day, clearly when they should have been working, you know, posting up stuff about, you know, answering just, you know, questions about hardware, software, programming, everything. It was really amazing. But anyway, if you set up an NNTP client, so you can do this on your modern PC or you can do it on the Amiga, you'll be able to see these posts. There's Dave Haney, Randall Jessup, Andy Finkel, Peter Kittle, all these well-known Amiga people from the time, Matt Dillon, Peter DeSilva, Dan Zirkel, Mark Barrett. I don't know if you remember these guys, if you're ever in touch, but it's really fantastic. In fact, thinking about it, in Brian Bagnell's books, in his Commodore books, there's quite a few mentions of Usenet, and he often mentions how the engineers would spend, you know, too much time on that. I think George Robbins was particularly keen on it. But so probably bad for business, but, you know, fantastic entertainment for the rest of us. So if you want to try it on the Amiga, now it was obviously it was all pure text-based stuff. So most people would have been on VAX VMS or on Unix. So it was all, you know, command line stuff. And one of the popular readers at the time was something called TIN. It was a threaded newsreader called TIN. It was just a command line thing. And actually there's a nice version of TIN on Aminet that you can download. TIN is actually based on something called TAS, which is even older, but there's a Commodore link here, and that's because the guy who wrote TAS was called Rich Schrenta, and he worked for Commodore on their Amiga Unix. And TIN is actually, incredibly, I checked, is still in development today at tin.org. So it's still being updated. But it's a nice little simple, you download it onto your Amiga, you set your, I think, you know, your username, your home directory, and point it at the NNTP server, and boom, you're reading the posts. If you want something graphical, there's an Amiga program called NewsCoaster. So that gives you a nice GUI and same thing. You have to configure it to point at the NNTP server, downloads the articles. You can browse them. You can browse them offline. So if you were on Usenet back in the 80s and 90s, and miss it, this will absolutely transport you back in time. If you weren't, well, certainly something to check out. Don't stop at the website because the website doesn't really do it justice. You need to, you know, sit down for an hour or so, configure up an application and dig in. And, it's just years and years of posts from everybody, you know, especially the Commodore engineers about the Amiga at the time. So really fantastic.
That is amazing.
That's a great one, Carl. So NewsCoaster is what I need to install, is it, to do this on the Amiga?
Yeah, NewsCoaster would be the easiest one. I mean, TIN was easy. I tried them both. I tried a few of them, quite a few of the things. If you search for Usenet or News on Aminet, you'll find a lot of programs, but they tend to be, it was back when you would do things by batch, you know, by UUCP, where you would dial up with your modem, you'd download the day's articles, and then you'd read them offline. And a lot of the programs that were written on the Amiga were to hook into that thing where you dialed up and downloaded your emails and you'd read them offline. I remember, I think I had a program called QBlue, I think it was called. It was like a FidoNet offline reader, you know. But for modern stuff, for just pure NNTP to just connect directly up like a Gopher client or that kind of thing. Yeah, NewsCoaster or TIN. And both of them have a config file and you need to just, you know, spend a few minutes tweaking it. You just have to set a couple of environment variables. But, you know, it's nothing too much and it's all documented. But yeah, really, really good stuff.
I'm looking forward to trying that one out. So the last item we have here in Discoveries is cat. It lets you print the contents of a file to a terminal. It's well known in Linux. But it doesn't come by default with Amiga, and I was delighted to see it there on Aminet. There's not a whole lot to say about it. There's already a more command on Amiga that does print out text one screen at a time, but in my case, I wanted to print everything and get, you know, straight down to the bottom. So Cat does that, and I think I had another reason for it too, which I can't remember, something to do with the script possibly or something like that, but there you go anyway. It's available for anybody who wants it. And that's the end of our discovery section. So welcome to our eyebrows section, where we look at websites that are a pleasure to use even on classic Amigas. This month, our first website is small.pub. That's smol.pub. This is an eyebrows-friendly blog, basically, and it lets you easily write a blog post and register and all that via eyebrows, and it can display the other blogs there, you know, in the main feed, and it loads really quickly. You can format your text with the markup language they have there to a certain extent. You know, you can have links and you can embed images and things like that. It's a lot easier than HTML to use their markup, and you can upload attachments of no more than 20 megabytes each. So yeah, it all leads to a very fast, clean experience that can be accessed from many platforms. You can publish from any browser, including iBrowse or even the Linux terminal, actually. They have a shell script for that. And not only is your blog published to the World Wide Web, but also Gopherspace and Gemini, which are alternatives to the web that I'll talk about more in a future iBrowse episode. And yeah, it's free to use, but consider supporting the developer and who also created the eyebrows-friendly midnight.pub forum, which we talked about in a previous eyebrows section.
Okay, search engine for vintage computers. So frogfind.com is a search engine intended for use on old web browsers. And it was actually developed by somebody who's getting their old 68K Macs online and struggling to find stuff that their older versions of Netscape or whatever could actually render. So it basically, you can go to it on your modern browser as well, frogfind.com, and lets you run a search which is passed through to DuckDuckGo. But when you click on a result, what it does is it strips down the HTML to a much more basic version that older browsers have a better chance of rendering. Now, what it's using is Mozilla have a library called Readability, and it's what Firefox uses for a reader view. So sometimes if you use Firefox, there's a little sort of book you can click on at the top, and it kind of simplifies the web page to, you know, an easier to read version. So it uses that library on the server side, and then shoots you back the simplified HTML so that you're, you know, you have a better chance to read it. Now, of course, the problem with this is even Firefox can't convert all sites into a reader view, so it's not going to magically just make the modern web work on an older browser. But it's something to try, and it might be a way to, make a few more websites accessible on the Amiga.
Playing around with this one this morning, and it's absolutely incredible, and I think that, like, it would be a really good default, at least one of the, you know, bundle bookmarks for eyebrows. It's really good.
Yeah, hopefully he doesn't get sort of slash dotted by, you know, everybody using his website. Of course, there's no privacy whatsoever here. It's HTTP because it's aimed at old computers, so he doesn't want to, you know, force HTTPS on you. So it's HTTP. It's all proxied. So all your searches and IP addresses are going through his server. But, I mean, that aside.
Now everyone knows what Irla was cooking for lunch.
Yeah, he knows he can't put a bicycle together without help.
Everyone needs a money.
Yeah, right. And the last one for eyebrows, this is the one of the most attractive websites I've ever seen, and it's based on ASCII. This is called ASCII Arena, and yeah, I would call this ASCII heaven for your Amiga. So I was originally browsing this on Firefox, and I never thought it could work on eyebrows, but since I was on eyebrows anyway, I said I'd give it a go, and to my surprise, it worked really well. Now, this was originally started in 2009, according to AmigaNews.de, but they spent the last year redesigning it, and it's basically been relaunched. All the old files are still there, all the old members, the membership is still there, so it's a renewed site, but it has all the history and the membership of the past. Well worth checking out because there's so much Amiga content on it. It's mostly, if not exclusively, Amiga ASCII art on it. So very nice and very enjoyable to browse on eyebrows. Next up, we have Ask Amiga.
Okay, so this month I was just going to talk a little bit about Well, it's sort of a technique or a phenomenon called tri-stating or tri-state. And what this is if you kind of know a bit about computers, you'll know that everything is basically works in binary, and how a computer thinks, everything's broken down to ones and zeros. And at a lower electrical level, let's say you've got a 32-bit computer, you've got 32 bits, and each one of those bits is a wire, and it contains a one or a zero at any given point in time. And so each of those ones and zeros, is a voltage. So one is represented by, in an Amiga, 5 volts, and zero is represented by zero. So you're all the data going, flying around the computer, flying over the motherboard, and up and down the cables is all sort of high, low, high, low, high, low, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, and it's high voltage and low voltage. So that's all well and good, and that's binary, and obviously the meaning of binary is to have two states. So you've got your higher and lower, and that's it, nothing else. But the reality inside a computer is that you've got a bus, and you'll have heard of that, and that's sort of a like mass transport for data. So the bus goes around a set route around your motherboard. So on the Amiga, again, it'll go from, let's say, the CPU to your memory to the custom chips. And I'm simplifying things, obviously, but so the data goes to all of them, and it goes to them all at the same time. So all the same wires are connected to them all, so they can all talk to each other. And this can cause a problem where, if like the RAM has to basically, if the CPU wants to read the RAM has to push that information onto the bus so the CPU can get it. So the CPU says, okay, I want the data from this address. And the RAM says, okay, and here you go, and pushes it up the bus. And then the CPU, if it wants to save stuff to RAM, it says, okay, I want to write this to this address. And then it pushes it down the bus. So what you have is all this data going around the place. But you've got a lot of chips that are connected to the bus that aren't involved in the data. So, what you could have, in theory, this doesn't happen. And because purely down to this technique or this concept that I'm going to talk about is, like, what's to stop the, let's say, the CIA's writing stuff onto the bus at the same time as the CPU or at the same time as the RAM? And what you have then is a collision and contention, and, the end user sees a crash screen or no screen. You get a black screen or garbage or, it's a pretty fundamental error that would take a whole machine down in an instant. So it doesn't really happen. Not normally. So how this is actually done is that all these chips or a lot of the chips have what's called tri-state outputs. So they output their 1 and they output their 0. So 1 is 5 volts, 0 is 0 volts. But they also have a third state, which is a high impedance state. And so you got a 1, you've got a 0, and you've got what they generally write down as a Z. That's the symbol for impedance in electrical terms. So actually, when a chip is accessing a bus like that, it can have three states. So you've got your two binary numbers and you've got a third one, which effectively makes it look like it's disconnected from the bus altogether. So high, low, and high impedance, or Z. And it's through that you can have all this data flying around and basically ignoring chips and chips ignoring the bus when they're not directly addressed by the CPU. And so that's the basis of things like having multiple devices on the same bus, like a SCSI bus or an IDE bus, and having, a master and slave drive. So when one drive is accessed, the other just ignores it and kind of sits back and lets whatever's going on go on without it. And that's all done through tri-stating the outputs from the chips. So, it's just an interesting thing because, it's a sort of a common thing that binary is only the two outputs or the two states, but really, in most stuff, you've got three states, and at a very low level, that's called tri-stating or tri-state inputs on a chip, tri-state outputs.
I did a diploma in electronic engineering, and even I hadn't heard of that before.
Right,
thanks, Rob.
it's a sort of a fundamental thing for data, but it'll be totally unheard of in any other kind of like in analog electronics or something like that. It'll be unheard of. So it's really only for situations where you've got a bus like that. So, there you go.
Right. Well, that's the end of our show. And it's the last podcast until we come back in September. We're going to take a break and go out and enjoy the sun if we get any and all that kind of stuff. So just a thank you to everybody who's been listening to us over the last couple of months. And I hope you have a nice summer until we catch you again. And when we see you next time, we might have some new developments in the podcast, and hopefully we'll have some news about the 2022 event. I know that we'll be meeting with the hotel sometime in September, possibly online, but just to discuss some details. And until next time.
Music was by Virtual Dimensions, Banjo Gaioli, and Extend.
Feel free to get in touch at info@amigausers.ie.
The song of the month this time is Your Music by ADKD, which came fourth place at Amiga Ireland 2021. Take care. See you in September. Bye-bye.
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 A studio can modify as well as record your music.
Nice one, guys. Thanks, Carol. You did great.
Oh, you did really great, I must say. Yeah. Thank you very much for that.
Natural.